Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 26th, 2016. Very important announcement tonight. And over past weeks, by the way, my main science topic tonight, I will be talking about comets and earthquakes and the actual equations and the physics of earthquakes caused by passing comets. And these are not the little poofball comets like Halley's Comet. These are big comets. Historically, we know that they existed. And I'll be talking about the basically the physics of how this works. And I'll talk about equations so that you understand. Many people think, oh, equations. Well, you will understand when I teach it to you. And I've had a long history of teaching people that are afraid of math. Unfortunately, that's a product of our educational system. Doing math is no more difficult than driving a car down the road, and all of you do that every day. Anyway, I'll get back to that. But over past weeks, I've been talking about the issue in Ecuador, the man-made earthquakes, and let me tell you something. I have been bombed, hacked, shut down, blocked, anything you want to call it, because I'm getting this message out. And believe me, there are people that don't want you to know about this. The thing I want to report about tonight is I didn't have quite enough information last week to cover this. And I actually did a special broadcast also, which I want everybody to listen to. It's posted on my webpage. You'll see the links there. I went on Brian Porter's show last week, Wednesday, not yesterday, but a week ago, talking about the radiation poisoning in Ecuador. So we have minimum 100,000 people living on the west coast of Ecuador, possibly as far up as Quito, although the fallout from the Rod from God nuclear blast that created the earthquake, most of that fallout would have been local. And so anyway, I have confirmation, probably 100,000 people with severe radiation poisoning from those blasts. This is beyond belief, but it's true. And I have confirmation. My advanced degree in physics is in nuclear physics and solid state physics. One of the things you learn, and I've had medical classes at the Tulane Medical School in physics, the physics of radiation and other things. So I know what radiation sickness is all about. And vomiting, sores on the skin that develop, large rash areas. And this is caused by the radiation grabs onto dust. And of course, in an explosion like that that's underground, blows the dust up into the atmosphere, and then it spreads outwards. So a number of days afterwards is when the people became sick. The hospitals were full, overflowing. The pharmacies sold out of every kind of cream and salve that were available. And of course, that's something that's not good to put on radiation poisoning because it holds it there. You have to clean it off. And a lot of people went into the sea to try and get rid of it, which was actually made it worse because this is along the coast. And so a lot of the dust and the radiation was in the water. So when they came out, they actually were covered with radiation dust, radiation pollen, you might call it. So the vomiting, the all of the other symptoms that go along with radiation poisoning, but the most pronounced, the skin sores. Now, this is severe radiation poisoning, and I'm going to go through the list of candidates who could have done this dastardly deed, this nefarious issue. And, of course, that's why I'm getting literally bombed. All of my web pages, everything that I've been trying to do just shut down at every turn. And of course, people have been emailing me, telling me that they have been denied access to my radio shows. Let's go through the laundry list of candidates who could have possibly have a rod from God and send it into Ecuador to cause this to happen. And it comes back firmly on the United States. But let me go through all of the list here. First of all, let's start out. Could it have been China? Well, China has everything it wants from Ecuador. It has it has had a good relationship with Ecuador for a long time. It has, for a long time, had loans to Ecuador, and the Ecuador gave away a southeast section of the rainforest to China to restructure a loan, not to pay it off, to restructure a loan that Ecuador was very much behind in paying off. So China is Johnny on the spot. But 2 days after the April 16th earthquake, China signed a $5.3 billion line of credit with Ecuador. And also, China is well engrossed in the southeastern section of Ecuador. And that is where the uranium deposits are. There are 8 deposits total, 7 pretty good ones. 5 of those are extremely rich, considered to be some of the highest grade uranium ore deposits in the world, next to possibly only Alberta, Canada, where, of course, the fire is going on up there and they're burning the people off their homes so they can get in and get the uranium there. So uranium, they will do anything. They will kill, they will destroy people's lives, they will do whatever. But now where the rods from God hit in western, off the western coast of Ecuador, is not where the uranium is. But China, you look at any type of criminal investigation, you try and find who was the person that could benefit from this. China had nothing to gain. China already had everything it wanted and more with Ecuador. So there's absolutely no reason for China to drop something. And second of all, it's doubtful if China has a space-based rod from God satellite like the United States does. China has kinetic energy weapons that they've tested, but they're anti-satellite weapons where they just kind of let out a shotgun blast of small metal junk, and it could take out a satellite. There's no satellite that could resist a blast of 35,000 mile an hour, metal chunks hitting it. So that's what China has. And they really don't have the technology to have something like rods from God. But even if they did, they don't have the incentive to do something like this to Ecuador. They have more than everything they want with handshake deals. Could Russia have done this? This is the second question, and there again we come up with a firm no. That Russia would not, this is not the way Russia deals with things. Russia and China are business partners. If you look at a lot of the uranium deals that are going down now in the world, Russia and China are commensurate with those. Russia already had a presence in southeastern Ecuador and as well as Bolivia in the excavation and mining of the uranium deposits. But Russia, the bottom line is that Russia and China are business partners. And they're already dealing with their trading oil back and forth, energy. They're in a SWIFT system. They created their own SWIFT system for international business. Russia and China are good friends economically. And there again, Russia has no incentive. Russia owns 2/3 of the uranium deposits in the world right now. including they have a vested interest in Ecuador. And they're already there. They've been there since 2008. So Russia does not have a reason, and let alone do they, and it's unknown if Russia has a rods from God capability. But if they did, they don't have the reason for using them on Ecuador. Once again, they have anything or everything that they might want from Ecuador. The only other possibilities are Japan and Europe, and Japan doesn't have space-based capability, nor do they have, I mean, with the problems going on in Japan today, they hardly have the wherewithal or the incentive or anything else to try and attack Ecuador. Japan gets its sources of nuclear fuel from other sources. And by the way, China, Russia, and the United States are dismantling nuclear warheads at an astounding rate, and that's where a lot of the nuclear fuel comes from for the world 400 plus nuclear power plants. They're coming from bomb grade fuel being decommissioned. So Russia, a little bit in China, the United States a lot, decommissioning nuclear warheads from the Cold War era to provide nuclear fuel. But a lot of the newer fuel is being processed from the current new supplies. So we come down to the fact that Europe and Japan, let me just mention this, Europe does not have a space-based military presence at all. They have a hard time getting up a little mini satellite to try and do something for a space program. Europe doesn't have any resources. There again, they get their nuclear fuel from the main powers on the open market. They're not going to be there. There's no incentive or any reason or capability from Europe, or certainly not Japan. So we come down to one last candidate, the United States. There is no question that the rod from God capability is there. We know it. They've had that. The United States has had this capability since around 2002. It's been perfected. They have the latest versions, and of course, those mill boys are just itching to get their little toys into action. And of course, why would the United States be interested? Because they are losing out presence in the race to mine and extract uranium. The Chinese are in there, the Russians are in there, and this is in the Western Hemisphere. So in the deranged, demented way of doing things with the CIA in charge of space operations, basically, this is the demented CIA way of doing business. Simply, burn down a bunch of religious people in Waco, Texas. Burn them out, and then shoot 21 women and children with snipers as they come out the back door. That's the CIA way of doing business, you know, or the Clintons or whatever. And so, once again, I'll be pummeled for making this announcement, but I wanted to make it clear that there's no question who did this, who sent in five rods from God into Ecuador. There's four confirmed. Let me talk about this. And this is all on the ground journalistic reporting done by myself, interviewing people who have had radiation poisoning. Everybody they know has had radiation poisoning. The hospital's filled. So let me talk about the exactly what happened on the May 18th earthquake. But let me just fill in a few of the blanks that I didn't cover for the April 16th earthquake in Ecuador. A rod from God came in. This is about 6:40 p.m., I think 6:38 p.m. local time, so that's after dark, or just about dark. And there's many videos of this. People saw it. A lot of people saw this thing coming in because people would have been out and about and in the street. There are videos that came up right away on YouTube. And then they said, oh, no, doggone, that was taken around Christmas time down there in Argentina. No, CIA boys, they're out there trying to muddy up the waters as soon as the news hits the street. But I know personally now a lot of people who saw the April 16th rod from God coming in. And they all describe it exactly the same with that little thin trail. It's the same thing that hit Russia. It's the same thing that came in over Turkey a couple of weeks ago. Russia about a year ago hit Tianjin, China about, a year and a half ago. Blew up a plant in China. Yeah, the boys are out there using these. The one in China, I don't think, was nuclear. That was a conventional explosion from a rod from God. They saw it coming in also. And so, the one on April 16th, about a number of days later, is when the radiation sickness began in earnest. That's when the people up and down the coastline really got sick. And then exactly 6 hours later, gee, you'd think there was a timer on that, came the second big one. But, of course, there were hundreds, literally hundreds of aftershocks in the first one in April. Come May 18th, a month and 2 days after the first big earthquake, Ecuador, as I reported, had not signed off on the World Bank loans. And I'm not going to recount all this. It's in last week's show. But it's obvious that the World Bank got the United States military to send in three, not one, not two, but three rods from God. These were all seen by thousands, tens of thousands of people as they rushed into the street 3 a.m. on March 18th, early Wednesday morning last week. The people are rushing into the street with a perfectly clear moonlit sky, and the three big streaks that are the smoke trails from the rods from God stringing across the sky. Boom. Okay, 3 in the morning comes the first earthquake. And the trails of smokes across the sky were there. One that was almost, from the description that I heard from people, that it was almost in line with the moon. And there were two other ones down below. Now, there were no aftershocks, not a single aftershock, which meant that once the rod from God nuclear explosion penetrated on the May 18th, just last week, there was not enough pent-up energy in the plates to produce even a single small aftershock. They had all been spent in the April 16th earthquake. 6 hours exactly, almost to the minute, after the May 18th initial earthquake comes the second big one, almost bigger than the first one. So there was two rods from God's going off. Now, there's a third one. Could it have been a dud? Or is it still sitting down there with a timer or waiting for a signal to go off? And could it be the big one, one that'll take that trench and suck it into the Pacific Ocean? Are they blackmailing President Correa of Ecuador into signing the loans off to the World Bank, thereby giving them of a chance at controlling the uranium? That's what is at stake here. So at any rate, that's where we are right now. And so we'll have more reporting shortly on literally on-site at Ground Zero reporting on this event. This is the only place you're hearing this. I broke this story. I've covered this story. And I will continue to have more news on this in the future. But using totally illegal nuclear weapons, space-based weapon systems on civilian targets for blackmail. All you have to do is understand here that the CIA is the police force of the World Bank. When you understand that, who controls the Rod from God weapons, you don't have to look any further, boys and girls, and you don't have to look any further to understand who is bombing my web pages, emails, etc. But I don't care. I don't care about these Looney Tunes. It's time to start pulling their pants down and showing off who they are. And this message has gotten to a lot of international higher levels. Let's just put it that way. The world collectively is getting very tired of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Inter-American Development Bank, and the various other branches, the CIA, the U.S., the U.S. military, and all the crap that goes with it. People are getting very tired of this around the world. And as an American citizen, when I was on Joyce Riley, she asked me, she said, Jim, when things happen like this, who do you go to? Who do you talk to? And literally, you can't trust anybody in politics anymore. You don't know who's cutting deals with who, who's making backdoor deals. In Ecuador, the Minister the Energy Minister quit. They replaced him with somebody else. You don't know who's in these backdoor deals, who's cutting deals with who, who's in bed with who. You don't know. So I had an experience. Let me just say this on the air. This was like 1982. I was in Los Angeles. And that's where I first got the real smell of international control, who was running the aerospace industry, etc. I was looking for funding for my aerospace projects. And what I found out was that these groups were all controlled by a very small group of families. And, you know, here's the thing, too. People think, Arabs against Israel and this type of thing. Hey, a lot of these leaders are all in bed together, you know. And so you don't know who to trust. And so anyway, being very naive back in the early 1980s, before I really understood what was going on, I knew I was being ripped off by some of the aerospace corporations. My ideas, my scientific work, etc. So I made the mistake of calling up the FBI and talking to them. It was the same day when they were feeding the same information that I was giving them back to the people who were ripping me off. They're buddies. Hey, all these groups work together. You cannot trust anybody in government, in these investigative agencies. They all work for the man. And they all work together. The problem today is most people don't have a clue the amount of money that is involved in this, the number of people in the U.S. And a lot of people think, somebody would certainly blow the whistle on this. No, because they're all making money on this. Do you know how many people are making millions of dollars, millions and millions of dollars on all of these backdoor deals in the aerospace industry and everything? None of them want to talk because it's their gravy train. These people would have to go out and get a real job if it weren't for all of these, the military aerospace systems and everything. Yeah, they'd have to get a real job like you. By the way, just an afterthought. I'm talking about who did this Rods from God earthquake in Ecuador. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. And the reason I did this is because I wanted you to understand that and be able to go through the whole chain of thought here, why this rests firmly on the United States. Change of subject just a little bit, but still talking about earthquakes. I put a little posting on my homepage. Possibly some people didn't see this, but what was the first historical record of a man-made earthquake? And possibly I've talked about this on the show before, but it was Joshua at the Battle of Jericho. This is in the Old Testament. And Jericho was a city, and of course there was an ensuing battle here over the city. And in the old days, what they did is they barricaded the city, and the people inside stayed in, and the army outside tried to keep anybody from going in. This is the same technique, the modern technique used by the U.S. to block countries like Venezuela and Iran from having any kind of financial success. And anyway, they have a few different terms for it today. But anyway, back in Joshua's day, they wanted to get, you know, into the city. And so anyway, what they did is they started to march, the soldiers, the army of Joshua, started to march around the city, stamping their feet in cadence. And this set up a resonant frequency. Now you can imagine this is a vibrational system, you know, which you would could determine in physics if you had enough data in mathematics. But the question is, how did they know the resonant frequency of the city walls of Jericho? Well, of course, they would have done this by trial and error. That's how they, you know, it's not like Joshua sat down with a slide rule or a calculator and determined what the resonant frequency was. And so within probably a short amount of time, probably not more than maybe an hour of doing this, they determined that as they stamped their feet at a certain resonant frequency. Now, let's for people that might have a hard time understanding this, there's many examples of resonant frequency in physics, like the, what is it, a high E opera singer can shatter glass. Well, how do they do that? Well, what happens is the glass starts to vibrate, and that just happens to be the resonant frequency. And what happens is that you keep putting energy in at that frequency. It's the same principle as a laser. Let's see what else has resonant frequency. A drum has a resonant frequency. Anyway, back to Joshua at Jericho. So the army marched in cadence, boom, 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 setting up a resonance and driving energy. Another great example is just the swing. You know, you get on a swing and somebody pushes you, and as you come back, they push you again and they push you again, and eventually, you know, you get going higher and higher and higher and higher. And that's another very simple example of a resonant frequency, where energy is put into the system little by little by little, and it keeps driving up to a certain point. And of course, if you're on a swing and you get get over horizontal, you're probably going to come falling down out of the swing. Anyway, but back to Joshua. So that's the first recorded historical event of a man-made earthquake. And of course, at the end, the walls of Jericho come tumbling down. There's a song about that. At any rate, that brings us up to a topic that I have covered before in great detail. There was a show long ago where I actually talked about all the various variables in comet objects. And now these are big comets. This is not the poofy little Halley's Comet type of comet that comes by Earth. But so I want to talk tonight a little bit about the equations, etc. But first, I'm going to give a couple quick announcements here, a couple topics. The Ivan Paa Solar Electric Generating Plant out in the Mojave Desert, around 4,000 acres, covered with 350,000 mirrors. That's a lot of mirrors, and these are big. They're like, I don't know, 10 feet by 10 feet, something like that, fairly large mirrors, all focusing on three towers. Now, this was this is a giant boondoggle, and it produces electrical energy. It sends the light up to these towers up at the very top, and creates heat, steam, which converts into electricity, and then... But this is only good during the daytime hours. Anyway, the thing is that the mirrors got out of whack. they started pointing at the tower, burned the just about burned the tower down. The other tower is down for maintenance, so this operation is running on one of its three legs, and they typically don't run at full capacity anyway. But anyway, that's just another good example of a boondoggle out there that's trying to create what they call alternative energy, and you know, it doesn't cut the mustard. It leaves the power control in the central power company hands, and that's the issue here. Also, there's some $55 million project that train, they're going to build a train to go up a mountainside, and this is, I think it's outside of Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, this train is supposed to take electricity to store it during peak hours, when they're, like, during the nighttime when there's not a lot of electric usage, and the power facilities keep producing electricity. They want to store it by moving this train up a hill. And then during the peak hours, so the peak requirement hours, so they'll store energy during off-peak times, and then they'll allegedly get energy back during peak times by driving this train, letting it roll down the hill, and converting that back to electricity. So this is $55 million for a prototype project. Now, let's just start at the basics here. If you had implemented my program, what I call distributed energy, in which the voltage is controlled literally at the house, then that $55 million could go towards voltage controllers at the house, and the energy, there would be no such thing as peak or off-peak or anything, because the energy would simply be dumped onto the grid, the current grid, not a smart grid. And then one by one, we would take nuclear and coal power plants offline and replace them with wind generators, not these ridiculous three-blade wind generators, which produce, if the wind is really blowing hard, and then if it's blowing at normal speeds, they don't produce anything. But anyway, the whole problem here is this is another Band-Aid masking the real problem. The real problem being that the central power company controls the voltage. And as long as these pseudo-projects keep getting funded and keep getting stuck into the grid, you know, these are false hope. These are not solutions. When I did my book, The Wing Generator World Energy Project, the one criteria that I have for any energy project is, will it make a dent in the world energy requirement? And the answer is no. How many 350,000 mirror facilities would you have to build to run the world energy needs? And it's ridiculous, because to do that, you would have to store the energy in some kind of a storage system like this stupid train. How many trains are you going to build to go up a mountainside and then come back down? But let me go into this train a little bit more. And I did this as part of my own training. I said, okay, let's take your automobile. Okay, take your automobile up a 600-foot cliff and take a boom and stick that boom out over the cliff and take your car, your full-size Cadillac car, and drop it on a winch, like a pulley system, down to the bottom. Okay, now store all of that energy in a battery system. And you have to say to yourself, what kind of battery pack would hold that much energy? Then you could take the battery pack and lift the car back up. And now this is a storage system. This is a way of storing electrical energy and retrieving it back. So potentially when you had excess energy from your alternative energy supply, you could raise the car up and then get the energy back. Your car dropping a 600-foot difference in elevation would be enough energy to store in a single deep cycle 12-volt battery. Now just wrap your brain around that for a second, everybody.
And then imagine that these guys are going to run this train with all the tracks and building this train and all the weight and all the infrastructure for $55 million. And how much energy are they going to get back? Now, they keep talking about efficiency. They say, oh, it's 80% efficient. Well, that's swell, boys and girls. But how much energy are you going to actually store, and how many of these trains are you going to have to build to store enough energy to compensate for the fact that the central power company that wants to control the voltage is going to maintain the voltage control? And then how many of these trains are we going to have to build to, say, supply the city of Las Vegas or Los Angeles? Hey, you're going to have to build about 30,000 of these stupid trains, buddy. Anyway, you know, come on. You know, this is getting silly. But $55 million for a prototype, and it'll take years to build. And, you know, it's a Band-Aid on a problem that the solution is to get rid of the central power companies. Very simple. But there again, you're fighting against the big boys. They got their investment. They like their energy. They like their control. Okay, so anyway, just another quick energy issue. This was on May 8th that Germany produced so much renewable energy, and it does this by biomass plants, which burns biomass, wind and solar and hydro. They were producing about 87% of their national requirement, which was 63 gigawatts. Around 55 gigawatts of that came from these biomass, hydro, wind, and solar plants. And so they actually paid consumers to use the energy. It was a negative return. And then Germany says it wants to hit 100% renewable energy by, drumroll, 2050. Wow. I mean, come on. This is so crazy. And then it says Denmark, for example, already generated more electricity than the country consumes from its wind turbines, and now exports surplus to Germany, Norway, and Sweden. Well, that's true, but it does that about 2 days per year. And then the other days, they have to rely on normal types of energy. That's where my wing generator system comes in, that and all of these countries depend on the central power company to control the voltage. That's the whole issue here, boys and girls. Believe me, as a physicist, as an engineer, as somebody who has studied this, as somebody who has written reports to the energy industry, the entire problem here is that the central power company wants to control the voltage. And if they didn't do that, you'd probably have 100% of the energy requirement being supplied by alternative energy. But they would need something that's reliable, like the wing generator. Not these other things, like solar, only works a few hours a day. Wind, with the three-blade wind generator, only works a couple hours a day, and very poorly when the wind doesn't blow. So they don't have a reliable source of alternative energy. Okay, anyway, enough of that. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, I missed a note here, that on these towers, these 300-foot towers out in the Mojave Desert with the mirrors shining on them, when the firefighters arrived to put out the fire on the one tower that had the misdirected mirrors, these firefighters had to climb this 300-foot tower to put the fire out. And also, can you imagine the guy telling them, well, we got some misdirected mirrors up there, and any one of those could fry a firefighter, like in a turn them into a puff of smoke. And these things kill thousands of birds. I mean, it's just, you have a 4,000 acre area where, you know, birds die. Thousands of birds get killed all the time out there. It's just nuts. Anyway, that's progress. Okay, so now to talk about earthquakes caused by passing comets. And remember that the standard astronomy story is that comets are little puffballs, little icy balls, and can't hurt anything unless they crash directly into you. But anyway, no, that's not true at all. Comets, literally any object in the solar system, including Earth, including Jupiter, including the moons of Jupiter, including our moon, all objects in the solar system are acting as comets because they're discharging the solar capacitor. Very simple. Objects like Earth and Jupiter in circular or near circular orbits around the sun don't discharge it as much because they're moving in equal potential with zero gradient. Basically, we're not cutting drastically through the gradient line of the voltage, the electric fields. And therefore, we don't discharge as much as a comet, which comes in on an elongated orbit. So anyway, and this is all basic due to my work that I did back in the 1970s, crystallized, of course, when I was at Cornell, and all of the data was coming in confirming this. But anyway, what I want to talk about tonight is actually a gravitational aspect of a passing comet. Now, a lot of people talk about electrical effects and magnetic effects and things like that. There's a lot of people jumping up and down, running around the internet trying to copy me, who don't have a clue about real science or physics. The electrical effects, that's one issue. Magnetic effects, that's another issue. The Earth's magnetic field is primarily plasma magnetic field. The ionosphere, the jet streams, the Van Allen belts are another layer of the five-layer magnetic field. The outer magnetosheath, which basically is created when the solar wind comes in, the particles, the positive charged particles move in one direction, the negative charged particles move in the other direction, which once again enhances the Earth's magnetic field. Okay, all that's well and good, but when a big comet comes relatively close to Earth, that's where the earthquake activity comes from. Now there can be other effects. There can be a magnetic jolt, things like that, due to the electrical current causing a magnetic field. Of course, there's iron and nickel locked into the Earth's crust, and so a jolt on that could cause a localized impulse on the Earth's surface. But the majority of the Earth's surface does not have big deposits of iron and nickel. They're pretty much localized, like the Mesabi Range up in the Midwest, etc. But the big cause of earthquakes is done by gravity. By gravity, which is a totally different force. Once again, there's some clowns running around the internet trying to say that gravity is an electrical force. No, it's not. Because gravity can work through electromagnetic shielding. Gravity works in spite of electrical fields and other electrical activity going on. The gravitational field and the gravitational effects remain very constant and very predictable. And if that were not the case, satellites in orbit, in low Earth orbit, would be all over the place, because basically they're shielded electrically and magnetically from the Earth, from this big mass down here. And so there's a dozen reasons to tell you that gravity is not electrical or magnetic. It's a totally different force. But at any rate, the equation for gravity, let's go back to basic physics 101, and I told you I'm going to give you some work with equations. 1 over r squared, in other words, if you take the center of Earth and the center of the moon, and you measure the distance between them, we'll call that r, that's the radius. And the force acting on the moon by the Earth and vice versa, because forces are equal and opposite, that's another Newtonian principle. And the equation is based on the mass of the moon and the mass of the Earth. And those are factors. In other words, you multiply those together. If the moon were bigger, the force would be bigger. And if the Earth were bigger, the force would be bigger between the Earth and the Moon, proportionately, based on their mass. Excuse me. But then you divide that by r squared. The r is the distance between their centers, the center of the Earth, the center of the Moon. That's r, the distance between them, 1 over r squared. So the bigger the distance between them, the smaller the force becomes as r squared. Now, here, I want you to mentally picture this. And in physics, a lot of times we do this. You do what in German they used to call Gedanken experiments, thought experiments. Take the Earth, take the Moon, put them in outer space, kind of put a pin in them so they don't move. Okay, now calculate and measure both, calculate and measure the force due to gravity of the Moon being pulled toward the Earth and then the Earth being pulled towards the Moon. They're equal and opposite forces, and if you let them go and let the force of gravity work on them, the Moon would move faster towards the Earth because it is less massive, and the Earth would move slower because it is more massive. So the majority of movement is in the Moon, which is less massive. Okay, but let's go back to where they're kind of stuck in place, arbitrarily pin them in a location, and measure the force through all parts of the Earth due to the Moon, and measure the force on the Moon due to the gravity, the gravitational force of the Earth. Okay, now, let's just leave them in that static position for a minute, and I'm going to talk about it. What is the propensity for earthquakes in this static situation? And the answer is really none, because there's the forces are static. Imagine you're a spot someplace in internal in the Earth, and you're feeling this force of gravity from the Moon. Okay. And all of a sudden, you're trying to figure out, is that going to cause the Earth to create an earthquake in that spot? And given that the Earth is, one composite piece, you would say, well, you know, potentially you could cause an earthquake because the Moon is pulling away. But after you let them sit there for a long enough time, everything is going to stabilize. And, okay, so the Earth is stable, the Moon is stable. Now, let's do something. Take the Moon and let's just move it quickly. Move it. And then stop it. What's going to happen to the gravitational force, this 1 over r squared force that's being felt all over inside the Earth? It's going to change directions. That's one thing that's going to happen, because a force is a vector. It has direction and magnitude. So the direction of the force is going to change. The magnitude may not change all that much, but the direction is going to change. So what have you done? It would be like coming up to a wall and taking your hand and slapping it against the wall. You've given it an impulse, but this is action at a distance. Because the Moon isn't there to physically hit the Earth. It's simply the action of its gravitational field changing. So change is the word here. Change is the topic, what we call in physics delta. Delta is like a little triangle symbol, and typically that's used to talk about change. So a change in force can take on a couple different aspects. What if you took the Moon and you moved it rapidly towards the Earth? What would that do? All of a sudden, the force pulling on the Earth and all the components of the Earth would increase. But what would happen? Since it's a 1 over r squared force, since the force gets less and less as you get farther away, the objects on the near side of the Earth are going to feel a force much greater, and the change in the force is going to be much greater on the near side of the Earth as on the far side of the Earth. So that's going to tend to pull the Earth in an elongated shape. These are called tidal forces. And if you go into calculus and you take the derivative, and some people will manage this, I'll talk a little bit about this in a minute, you come up with what is known as a 1 over r cubed force, which drops off much faster. In other words, the tidal forces, the things that cause earthquakes, are very short-ranged. A lot of people don't know this, but every day as we rotate, Earth rotates under the moon, and of course the moon is in orbit around the Earth, but we rotate so that the moon is up in the sky once per day, up above you. And then 12 hours later, about 12 hours later, the moon is on the opposite side of the Earth. So what's going on? Constantly the moon is changing the force vector on the Earth. That's what causes the ocean tides. The ocean is following the moon as it moves around as the Earth spins under the moon. So that causes the tides. And those same tides could be as much as, say, 15, 20 feet in some areas, and not so much in other areas. But the point is that the land, a lot of people don't know this, but the land, due to the moon, the Earth moving under the moon every day, the land actually rises and falls about an inch. And you don't notice it. It's not like you feel like you're all of a sudden you're moving up and then moving down. But that's due to the moon. Now, imagine a large passing comet. Something, let's say, four Earth masses, like the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, which NASA lied about. Gee, isn't it swell to have a great, reliable space agency that gets billions of dollars every year and you can't believe a word they say? Anyway, imagine an object four times the mass of Earth coming by. Now, it doesn't matter how big it is physically. What matters is the mass. And there are, anyway, that's a little bit more complicated calculus problem. If anybody's adept at that, you could work on that. What is the difference in force due to the size of the object? But anyway, coming back to something a little simpler. Now, the moon is relatively small compared to Earth. And the surface gravity of the moon is quite small compared to that of Earth. But now imagine something that's much bigger than Earth. And it's coming by fast. Here's the ticket. It's coming by fast. So what are the factors? What are the three factors that cause this object, this passing object, which is going to be discharging the solar capacitor, therefore it's a comet, what are the three factors that are going to cause an earthquake and affect the size of earthquakes on Earth? If it were small and far away, so very, very low mass, far away and moving slowly, it would have relatively little effect. So imagine a comet like Halley's that really doesn't have any mass at all compared to Earth. You're not even going to notice it. But now imagine something four times the mass of Earth. Well, let's say this object comes through the solar system at a high velocity. It's got a high mass, and it comes at close range. Now you're talking about the capability of introducing tremendous earthquakes all around the globe and all sides of the globe. Plus, the Earth is turning, remember. So you could get some relative velocities here of, you know, maybe 10,000 miles per hour or more, 50,000 miles per hour. At a close range with something very massive, this thing is going to take Earth and shake it to its core. Thus the biblical story, you know, the mountains will be moved. And they do. The mountains, now imagine a wave. Okay, let's take a wave. You've all been at the ocean. You've seen the waves come in. And what happens when the wave hits the rocks on the shore? It comes in. They build up and they smash against the rock and they just explode. All that energy goes ballistic, basically. Now imagine a wave in the land, coming across the land. Let's imagine out in the middle of the plains, Kansas, Nebraska. And this wave is coming along at maybe a couple thousand miles an hour, And this is in the land. This is a wave in the land, and it's possibly 200 to 300 feet high. And this wave is moving at a few thousand miles an hour. You're going to feel it. You're going to know it's there, passing underneath you. And when that wave hits the Rocky Mountains, it's going to be absorbed. All of that energy is going to be absorbed, and some of it's going to reflect back, and it's going to set up standing waves off the side of the mountain. Those are the foothills. The standing waves coming off the side of the mountains are the foothills of the mountains, and the rest of that energy is going to take and it's going to push that mountain, the existing mountains, because it's an obstruction blocking the wave, and it's going to thrust them up, and a tremendous amount of energy is going to be expended in the transfer from the wave into the mountains. That's why when you go to the Rocky Mountains or the Himalayas or the Andes Mountains or whatever, what you're going to see is dozens and dozens of issues of mountain building, all wrapped in those mountain chains. Tremendous, unbelievable amount of energy expended at one instant to build those mountains. These are not built by slow tectonic movement. That is a myth of modern science. Just a couple minutes left here. I'm going to talk about arsenic. I'm going to see if I can get the arsenic maps up, but my filter elements remove arsenic in the single filter element. And that's something, not only is it arsenic and fluoride, other people are still trying to sell you an add-on filter. I used to sell those. I don't sell them anymore. It's an old, out-of-date technology. And all of the filtration, whether it's for glyphosates or chloramine or whatever it is, the long laundry list of toxins that are in the water today, all taken out in one filter element, and it leaves the beneficial minerals to pass through. Now, how do you do that? A lot of people go, oh, how can you do that in the filter? Well, it's intelligent filtering, because the toxins that are removed are targeted, and it takes a lot of technology. This is brand new technology in the JMCC water filter. So anyway, because of this week, my webpage is still there. The sale prices are still there. So a lot of people are replacing their filter elements from their old worn out whatever brand or make or model you bought years ago, a filter element. My filter elements fit them all, because they all came out of basically the same technology. But go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Check that out. Also, take a look at the new style webpage, which is going to be available also. But oddly enough, a lot of people are still using the old webpage, which is great. The old J. McCanny Science sales page. Anyway, go to there, jmccsci.com. Take advantage of the still low prices on the water filter elements and all the water filter products, plus my books, CDs, DVDs, etc. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroad. Good night.